Hello, my name is Ari Lannis, and I am with the Office of Global Spiritual Life at NYU, and this is Multifaithful. On this week's episode, we are going to talk about paganism and witchcraft, which is a new topic for the podcast. We haven't delved into this religious community before, and to do that, we're going to bring in Alex Marr, a journalist and writer who's written and chronicled a lot of these communities in different publications and outlets. So without further ado, to the conversation with Alex. So I'm joined tonight by Alex Marr, a journalist and author, and author of the book Witches of America, which is one of the 100 notable books for the New York Times bestseller list 2015. Alex, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So your book is about a topic I thought was really interesting. I'll be honest, I don't know much about. It was about witches, paganism, the occult. There are sort of these different categories or words that were used a lot through the book, and I have a feeling most of the people who listen to this podcast don't know very much about any of that. So I thought maybe we could start with just like some basic terminology. So when we're talking about paganism or witches or any of these, like, what are we talking about?
Sure. Well, most of the time today in America, when people talk about witches or witchcraft, mm-hmm. what they're usually referring to is paganism,
right.
Which is actually a movement, sort of a new religious movement that started to gain ground in the 60s with the mm-hmm. counterculture movement, and then with second wave feminism. And then you fast forward to the internet, and it really started to spread through online channels as well. And what it means to be a pagan is, I try to describe it as, through an analogy to Christianity. You know, so when someone mm-hmm. says Christianity, they mean obviously an umbrella which contains a number of groups. And so in paganism, you have, some of your listeners may have heard of Wicca, mm-hmm. which is sort of the best known witchcraft religion. Then there's Druidism, there's fairy, which is a witchcraft tradition I mentioned in the book, and so on. What they all have in common, just like, you know, there are things that Baptists and Catholics and right. Episcopalians will have in common, is that there's a belief that nature is sacred, mm-hmm. that men and women and male and female forces in the universe are equal, mm-hmm. That men and women equally have the right to become spiritual leaders in their community. They refer to themselves as priests and priestesses, but also as witches.
Right.
And there's, for instance, another important factor is that there aren't concepts like guilt and sin, right. Or original sin. And sex and sexuality is seen as very natural and very positive. In general, it's a very tolerant and inclusive mm-hmm. religious movement.
Right. I feel like, and this may be just because of my own upbringing, but I feel like I'm very, the word pagan has sort of connotations with almost like pre-Christianity or Judeo-Christian
yes.
religion.
Certainly, yes.
In a way that it doesn't strike me as especially fair to people today who are practicing paganism, or as sort
right.
of like a funny use of the same word in both places. Because I know, like, growing up, we always used to hear about, like, paganism was like this really old religion that was like, sort of like the world had moved past it.
Right, almost
which
like
is,
calling someone a hick or
right.
something.
But
right.
which is obviously like an unfair characterization.
Right, well, you know, there's the word pagan is definitely kind of like a reclaiming of the word today. Mm-hmm. There are different interpretations, but initially, you know, it's funny that I use the word hick as a, mm-hmm. as a comparison. During ancient times, I believe the Latin word was paganus, but it was used as a term to dismiss people who were behind the times,
right.
hadn't signed on with Christianity,
mm-hmm.
And they were often people living in rural areas.
Because right. I once heard someone quip to me, no pagan ever called themselves a pagan, because it was meant as like this derogatory, like that is exactly the context
right.
you're talking about. And so I think as I was reading your work and like really learning a lot more about it, I was like, I had no idea. Like, that line, it's such a, it's so removed from the context in which I think people are using it.
Oh, definitely. But you know what?
In a way that doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. Well, today it actually serves as a really interesting reminder that there was a time before Christianity. And, you know, there was a time when pagan practices were dominant in, you know, the ancient Roman Empire. I mean, this is not a big newsflash.
Right.
But in our day-to-day lives now, it's really easy to forget. There really is the sense that the Abrahamic religions, you know, predate everything.
Right, especially here in the U.S.
Exactly. So there's also, you know, in using the word pagan, I think there's a deliberate desire to kind of suggest that it's more essential, more like a return to natural roots. And it makes sense because it is an environmentalist movement, because there is the idea that, you know, rather than build large synagogues or cathedrals, you can go into nature wherever you live and create a sacred space there. And you may be able to actually connect with what is sacred more easily, surrounded by trees or what have you. And it suggests that maybe that's something that the majority religions are kind of losing track of.
Right. Yeah, and I'm curious. I mean, your book is very much about your own journey.
Sure. Yes.
And your some of your articles also. So I'm curious, like, how, if maybe for people who haven't read the book yet, if you could give just a little context as to how you became interested in this group of religions, this type of religion. I know you grew up Catholic.
Yes.
And so how did, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course.
Transition.
So I was born and raised in New York City in Manhattan, but I'm first generation American. My mother is Cuban and Catholic, and my father is Greek and Greek Orthodox. And so I was, the predominant religion in my childhood was Catholicism. But at the same time, my mother was always a liberal and a feminist, and so it was already a kind of especially tailored version of Catholicism. So while I was taught to really, you know, appreciate the rituals and the mass and the artwork and a lot of the ideas of Catholicism and contained in the Bible, it was already in this spirit of like, well, you know, but we should maybe consider some revisions.
You know?
So the from an early age, the question was raised to me of, you know, well, maybe it's not quite right that women aren't also allowed to become ordained. Maybe there are aspects of the Catholic Church in the Vatican that are a little too man-made, or and certainly it's a massive worldwide organization, and there's a lot of room for human fallibility. So that's kind of the background for me. And by the time I was of college age and in my 20s, I realized that I wasn't really connecting with the Catholic Church anymore, and yet I felt that something was missing. I really missed the drama of ritual and the sense of marking moments in your life through ritual, through mass, through showing up at church, and the stories of from the Bible and the stories of the martyrs and the great artwork it all inspired. It felt so much bigger than mundane life.
It's hard to regenerate that sort of out of nowhere.
To
regenerate that as an adult.
Yeah. It's
very difficult.
It's hard, you know, and I ended up, you know, I spent some time working in the visual arts, and then for a long time I've been writing, and most of my friends are, you know, artists and journalists and filmmakers, and so it's a lot of people on the West Coast and the East Coast who are proud to be agnostics and even atheists, and there's a lot of intellectual suspicion of, you know, devoted religious practice. But I just came to a point where I thought, like, you know, that doesn't really give you an the upper hand with the huge existential questions that we all walk around with, right? So saying that you've quote unquote outgrown the religion of your youth doesn't resolve any of those big issues. You know, how do we give meaning to the work that we do every day, and so on. So anyhow, as a journalist as well, when I realized that there was this growing pagan movement that was relatively underdocumented in the mainstream press, it was just too tempting. I mean, I was really curious on a personal level. You know, here's a movement where people are openly practicing witchcraft, whatever that meant, because, you know, it was very exotic sounding to me. Here are, you know, it's a movement where women are priests, and it's very compatible with, like, liberal politics, very tolerant, and there's a real strong, it's not centralized around, say, a Vatican. There's a lot of independence. And I just was dying to find out more. So I made a documentary called American Mystic. And one of the three plot lines of the doc followed a woman named Morpheus, who I met in my travels, who was at the time a very charismatic, you know, late 20s priestess, pagan priestess, living way off the grid in California. And in the process of making that film and trying to wrap my head around what witchcraft religion is today in this country, I realized that I wanted to get in closer, you know, to kind of jump in. So the book documents what was never part of the film and what came later, which was, you know, how I decided to train for a time with a coven in New England and also with an occult society in New Orleans.
And I imagine of the people you're describing, sort of liberal East and West Coast journalists, artists, or whatever, this was surprising, to say the least.
Completely.
So, and to, and I'm very much even as someone who cares very much about religion, I'm also like very much a rationalist, and so spirituality and sort of these types of terms are that we talk about it, to me, like I can't fully wrap my head around it. So I'm curious for how did you describe to people like what was happening and why this was drawing you in or why this was interesting?
Well, first of all, I highly recommend if you find yourself embarking on a multi-year writing project to completely not tell a bunch of your friends anything about it. So, you know, there was a close-knit group of friends who I shared a lot of my experiences with along the way, but I mostly tried to process a lot of it on my own, and I knew that I was going to be met with a lot of skepticism from, you know, my regular social circle, and so I just tried my best to, you know, control the conversations I was having. When the book came out, I will say, I mean, just so many people have sort of, you know, come out of the woodwork to me as who are on the surface in New York City or in LA, very practical, agnostic atheist types, who privately are actually doing a lot of seeking. And, you know, I had one young man in particular who I remembered who admitted to me that he had been in a Catholic seminary for something like 8 years and lost his faith. And somehow in the process of reading this book, because paganism seems so far away from his own more mainstream spiritual roots, it, I guess, gave him the freedom to start asking those questions again. And I thought, well, okay, that sounds very useful. I felt good about that.
I'm curious. I feel like the instinct or sort of the set of questions that sent you down this journey is parallel in a lot of ways to a phenomenon that we were actually discussing right before we started recording that I see with a lot of students who grow up in religious communities and who are seeking for something in campus. And I think a lot of people are looking towards mindfulness and meditation and sort of forms of spirituality that for them aren't tied to a religious background that they grew up with or some sort. And so I'm curious, how many of the people that you've talked to about this have also are exploring in like many different communities for this? And also, why is it that I think when we talk about, especially young people, we talk about exploration or religious exploration, nobody thinks to talk about paganism. Like, people are very interested in talking about people seeking, you know, who come from maybe a Judeo-Christian background who, like, find a lot of meaning in Buddhism, all right? Like, that's a journey that we hear about a lot.
Of course.
Why don't we hear about paganism more, because the way you're describing it and the type of journey you're describing actually in a lot of ways does sound familiar.
You know, I think it depends on a few things. Like one, if you're on the West Coast, I think there's a very high chance that that's part of the conversation with younger people. And also, I have actually seen, you know, through publishing the book in hardcover and now in paperback, it's been, you know, over a year now. And I have actually seen a lot of people in their 20s, especially women, who, and also young gay men, who have been very attracted to witchcraft as a spiritual practice, at least as something to check out. And some of that may be that it seems trendy or fashionable, or there's something in the pop culture that's pointing them that way. It seems rebellious. It seems like a way to, you know, react in contrast to whatever they were raised with. But I think a lot of it is also genuine. But in terms of the, you know, the more official channels where it's not being raised as another path to explore, it may simply be that we're still at a moment where this is entering the zeitgeist.
Right.
And there is a certain amount of fear. And, you know, the word witch and the word witchcraft, I mean, it's still, you really associate it with...
Right, that's good. That elicits strong reactions.
Yeah, horror films. I mean, it just sounds terrible and terrifying. And, it, you know, you think of hags in the woods who want to, you know, kill infants or something. So, I mean, you know, and again, this is an instance of a movement that's reclaiming a very controversial, loaded word on purpose with full awareness that it's very charged. And I think part of it is this idea like, well, they used to call certain women witches. Fine, call me a witch. I'm not afraid of being seen as a powerful, you know, potentially dangerous woman. And, you know, to some degree, there's something fun in that to have a little bit of rebellion in your religion. so, but, you know, the other part of that, too, is that there's a lot in common in terms of what you see in the rituals across different witchcraft traditions, you know, within the pagan movement. And a lot of it will be familiar to people from overly dramatic Hollywood films that they've seen. People really do gather in a circle, often in outside in nature if they can, at night under the moon, potentially.
Dozens of scenes in the book.
Yes.
Like vivid and real. They were great.
Oh, good. Thank you. Yeah, I really wanted to try to capture what it felt like to stand in circle with some of these people and to take part myself. You know, and sometimes they're very dramatic robes and chalices and daggers. And then again, I've kind of described a lot of the accoutrements of the Catholic Church. It's just that taken out of that context, it starts to seem a lot more theatrical and exotic. But yeah, so there's, you know, I even mentioned, you know, Morpheus, when I first met her, she had a henge made out of huge stones that she'd set up on her property in the middle of nowhere. And so you couldn't get any more dramatic than that, than inviting your friends to come and take part in rituals under the moon in an actual henge. So a lot of that will seem very exotic to your listeners, but so much of it serves the same purpose as prayer in any number of faiths.
So one of the things that immediately stood out to me when I was reading this and that you actually mentioned before is sort of the connection between a growing pagan movement in the United States and second wave feminism, which I don't think really would have occurred to me and probably hasn't occurred to many listeners who haven't like really delved in. So I'm curious if you could unpack that a little bit for us and explain like what the connection is between the two and why this movement appeals to many second wave feminists and like why are those two linked in this way?
Well, and now we're on to third wave feminism. And I would say that, with our new president elect, we're ready for fourth wave feminism. But you know, second wave feminism in the 70s, it was a moment when a lot of women were questioning why they were living in a culture that was dominated by men, and whether it was in the workplace or domestic arrangements, mm-hmm. childcare, you name it. And then that also carried over to, you know, questioning the religions that they were raised with. Why aren't women allowed to become priests or other kinds of spiritual leaders, depending on the community that you're in? Why is it that female sexuality is seen as controversial and dangerous, mm-hmm. and you know, all of these very large questions that, frankly, we're still grappling with in a lot of parts of the country today.
We've improved a little bit.
A little bit. I mean, a couple weeks ago, I would have thought we'd come a long way, and now, now I think a lot of women are asking, you know, asking real questions about where we're at.
Yeah.
But so it seemed pretty obvious that if you were interested in, if you were asking questions about women's rights, mm-hmm. that would then bleed over into your personal spirituality. And so there, the pagan movement, mostly on the West Coast, mm-hmm. introduced the possibility of, okay, well, women can be priests. We can also reclaim this word, witch, and we can kind of look back at all the women who've been persecuted in European history and consider that a part of our heritage. I mean, it was a very specific interpretation of paganism in the mm-hmm. 70s amongst certain feminists. And so, you know, a couple years ago, in the process of researching the book, I ended up at a gathering of a few thousand pagans in rural Illinois. And while I was there, a section of that group had a gathering of feminist witches, many of whom had been around and part of the movement mm-hmm. in the 70s. We gathered in the woods, and we had sort of an old school 70s feminist witchcraft ritual. Mm-hmm. And it was very much about reclaiming your body as a woman, and a lot of the language was also sort of dated. We talked about the power of wombs and you know, menstrual blood, and I think it was incredible to see these women create a space that was a place where women could come together. Right. At the same time, I'm not sure how one updates that.
Right,
for this moment.
My next question was going to be, so is there, like, I mean, third wave I know feminism has changed quite a bit since the 70s also, so I'm curious if the feminist voice within the pagan movement has sort of changed with it.
It seems like, you know, the feminist movement within the pagan community also embraces the LGBTQ movement, mm-hmm. And is just a little bit more in tune with, you know, the way that we talk about women's issues now. I think the curiosity about witchcraft that I mentioned to you before, you know, that I've observed during my book tour and mm-hmm. you know, all these different events, I do think what that points out, though, is that there are a lot of women in their 20s right now who are looking for some kind of feminist gathering they can have that's connected to their spiritual life. And I don't know if they're going to land on paganism, but I think it's a sign of that there's still that kind of frustration. And it's like we've outgrown the 70s thing, but we are not sure what is comfortable now.
Right. Yeah, I think, I mean, just anecdotally, based on sort of interactions with students or young people at NYU, that strikes me as sort of an accurate read of, like, young people.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll see. I'm really curious to see where women's movement goes over the next exactly 4 years, starting on January 20th.
Yeah, so I'm curious... So the reception to your book has been mixed, and some people some people within the pagan community have various critiques of it.
Yes.
And so people can kind of research that in their own time. But what I'm actually really curious about is writing about a spiritual community or religious community as someone who didn't grow up in that world or isn't totally of that world. And sort of, I feel like some of the controversy is an inherent pitfall of that dynamic. And it's really, really difficult to write about an insular community as an outsider or as an insider, as someone who's exploring that boundary.
Yeah. I think it's very, I think writing about faith in general is a messy undertaking. Yeah. It comes with tremendous amounts mm-hmm. of baggage. It's really sensitive. And I think it's regardless of, you know, what faith you sure. write about. On top of that, we're talking about a minority religious community that hasn't had much coverage in the mainstream. And so I think there was a desire to see this book kind of be everything
right.
about paganism. I tried very hard to make it clear that this was, you know, I was giving a kind of capsule histories in an accessible form to right. people who weren't familiar with it. But otherwise, it was you know, structured around my journey mm-hmm. as a way to just, you know, emphasize this is someone else could
right.
could have this kind of experience and write a different book. But I think, you know, this question of the insider versus outsider is a really it's a real issue.
Yeah.
Whenever you write in any kind of journalistic way, you're trying to be objective and to step outside of the moment. But I realized that this book had to be more of a hybrid. So it's nonfiction journalism on the one hand, but it has a very strong element of memoir.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, these ritual scenes that you mentioned before, I just found it to be completely artificial to try to write about ritual as if there's an objective experience.
Right.
So I wrote about these rituals mostly from my perspective within
mm-hmm.
different circles. And I think, you know, what came with that was my own skepticism as mm-hmm. someone who was new to this world. I was very genuine in my exploration. I really did want to see where this could go for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the questions that raised for some pagan community readers was, well, perhaps the only person who should be writing about the community is someone who's been part of the community for a decade or two mm-hmm. decades, is incredibly devout, and has other specific kinds of bona fides. My approach was really about incorporating kind of this grayer zone of wrestling with faith into a book describing a faith-based community.
Right.
So that was my specific approach. I don't think I will ever come to like a concrete answer about, you know, my spiritual practice. I don't
right.
know. And I think that's okay. And I think that applies for a lot of people in my life.
For sure.
And I wanted to be really honest about that.
Right.
So I think, you know, I'm okay with that being part of the controversy.
Right. I'm curious, do you think if you had, I feel like conversion isn't the right word, but if you had undergone like a full conversion at the end and written.
Right. A revelation.
But written still the exact same book, do you think it would be different?
I don't know. That's a really good question. There is a sort of, I think that there is a sort of revelation at the end of the book. But it's kind of a messy one, you know.
Yeah.
I think, you know, then you have a book that is dominated by kind of like a conversion narrative,
right?
And it would have just been a very different thing,
mm-hmm.
different animal.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I was reading up on sort of what people, some of the reviews, both at like from magazines, also from within the pagan community, I'm just struck by how difficult it can be to communicate information about like a very diverse and not well understood group of people to like a wider audience without flattening, without people feeling like there's exploitation. It's just really difficult, and it's an issue that I feel like at a university we struggle with also, because in a lot of ways we're representing religious life on campus, or like these big broad concepts, and we're
yes.
trying to incorporate everyone on behalf, right? And there, some of these dynamics play out also, and I teach about religious literacy a lot, and you know, it's hard to, or it, like I obviously have a much easier time articulating certain concepts from within a Jewish lens, and then I know the Muslim community really well, so I can do it really well from within a Muslim lens, but as I get further and further away from my own experience, it becomes more and more difficult to do.
Right.
And I think everyone sort of struggles with that dynamic.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point. And I think it's an issue of translation and to what degree a certain faith-based community wants to be translated
yeah.
to others, or in this case, you know, it's a minority group being translated to the mainstream, and to what degree some people in that community have no interest in being right. in sort of quote unquote explaining themselves, you know, right. that kind of thing. And I think both stances are totally valid. The project of this book was very much, you know, okay, I'm going to write this in terms that a mainstream audience will understand. I will take for granted that there's certain biases and assumptions that come from, in this case, Hollywood horror films right. or what have you, scary folk tales. Mm-hmm. And I'll operate with that as a starting place and then kind of show the, you know, imaginary mainstream reader that there's actually a lot that's in common between paganism and, you know, Christianity, Judaism, you know, what have you. Some people within the pagan community really appreciated that approach as sort of a kind of like a tool to have out there. Well, right. great. Okay. So there's this book that now mm-hmm. is part of a larger conversation.
Right.
And I hope that many other books are written on this topic. And this is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Then there were people who really were like, why are you assuming that the reader doesn't know these things? Why are you assuming that the reader has, certain kinds of biases?
Right.
And you know, I think that is sort of, that presumes an audience that's just more familiar than most people are going to be with this movement.
Right. I'm curious, do you think, I feel like I think the media landscape just becomes more diverse and there are like more streams of sort of TV shows, right? There are more scripted TV shows now than ever before and lots of other, right? I mean, we have a podcast at a university. Everyone has a podcast. Like, a lot, right? Like, that's not an unfamiliar thing. So I'm curious, do you think there'll be sort of either a pop culture or a culture moment around paganism where people are going to, like, see it appearing more in sort of forms of media that they consume and really begin to understand it more? Like, is it going to start to become more of a mainstream, well-understood thing, or are we still far away from that point?
It's funny because it is, as a community, I don't think you have a spiritual movement that is already kind of in this very surface, unfair way, so much a part of the
right.
pop culture.
Well, that's I guess sort
you like
of the quote funny
unquote witchcraft,
right.
like the idea that you know we know who witches are
right.
and you know they're nasty people in the woods hexing us. So that's kind of interesting. There's a way in which witches in this country are completely saturate popular
right.
culture. In terms of actual witchcraft practice and pagan practice, I think there's still limited understanding. But
yeah.
I do think that there is a real movement towards, like it really is, I think, entering the zeitgeist in a way, because when I started making the documentary, which came out in 2010, I started working on it maybe 2.5 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
I would tell friends who were asking me about the film, what it was about, and I would mention that there was someone in the film who considered herself a witch and that she was pagan, and the reaction was always, I mean, across the board, you know, amongst even my most kind of literate, curious friends, like, what are you talking about? Like,
right.
what does that even mean? You know, and paganism, what is
mm-hmm.
that? By the time I got around to starting work on the book a few years later, I would mention this to people I met at parties or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and people would say, oh, do you mean Wicca? And are they pagans? Like those
right.
two words had somehow crossed over. And by the time the book was ready to come out and there was some, you know, advance
mm-hmm.
buzz that it was, you know, going to be out soon, I was kind of, you know, in a playful way accused by some people of really jumping on a trendy moment.
Right.
You know, like, well, okay, it took a couple of years. but so that's, I think, a real shift that I've had a funny view of, you
mm-hmm.
know, through this experience.
That's fascinating. So I'm curious, as we wrap up, in your own spiritual journey for people, I know the last chapter of your book, you kind of come to, you talk a little bit about how almost you're still unsure, and there are a lot of parts of this that appeal to you, but you also still have some skepticism. So I'm curious if you're like talking to maybe some younger people at the university or something and talking about your own spiritual journey over the last 20, 25 years, like how would you categorize where you are now and sort of the set of questions that you're thinking about now? And is that animating any future work? Like, is there any book on a movement that we can expect that's like really interesting?
I love how you're ending on the tiniest question.
Yeah,
it's not a big question at all.
Very small.
You know, I, throughout the process of writing the book, I was very much, you know, like an ardent seeker, very curious, and really trying to push myself to figure out if I had a specific spiritual identity, if I could, there was a community that had kind of like an answer for me, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I'm still someone who's actively searching. There were things that I learned through the pagan community that, you know, are a part of who I am now. At the same time, I also feel now like that there is more that I need to understand about my Catholic roots. You know, as I alluded to earlier, I think I'm someone who may be asking herself questions for a long time. But I think that for me, that defines my spiritual life. And I am now at a place that I wasn't before I started the book, where I feel that that is okay. Mm-hmm. And I will see what form that ends up taking.
That's interesting. I think my siblings like to make fun of me. They say that I live in a perpetual state of like existential angst. So I can very much identify
Fantastic.
With that sort of place to end. Thank you so much. This has been great.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Multifaithful. Especially to thank our guest, Alex Marr, for coming in and for just a really interesting conversation. A special thank you to Brian Young for editing and producing the podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please be in touch at spiritual.life@nyu.edu. Please rate and review the show on iTunes. We look forward to having you back for another episode in 2 weeks.